This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. Even before COVID-19, health disparities between Black and white Americans were stark. Black Americans have higher rates of stroke, heart disease, obesity, diabetes, and infant mortality. So it is no surprise that Blacks have lower life expectancy than whites. Then coronavirus hit, and once again, it is affecting African Americans disproportionately. Then over the past week, the nation's ugly legacy of racism was on display, first with a woman in Central Park calling the police on a Black man who asked her to leash her dog. And then, of course, the death of George Floyd by a Minneapolis police officer. Last month, Franklin County declared racism a public health crisis. Last night, Columbus City Council did the same, highlighting how racism can have negative effects on physical and mental health. This hour on All Sides with Ann Fisher, racism as a public health crisis. We are joined now by Franklin County Commissioner Kevin Boyce, who, as we said, was among those who voted for public health crisis designation for racism. Commissioner Boyce, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Ann Fisher's voice has gotten a little deeper. But,
yes. Ann Fisher is away. Her timing is everything for Ann. She's taking a much needed vacation, and all hell breaks loose here in her hometown. Right. We got her covered, though. We got her covered.
I'm sure you do, and I'm sorry I was really sitting around, but it's good to be here. Thanks for having me on today.
Before we talk about the designation of racism as a public health crisis, I want to talk about just the past couple of days. You were downtown on Saturday. You were hit by the pepper spray or mace or whatever it was with City Council President Shannon Harden, Congresswoman Joyce Beatty. Things have calmed a little bit since then. How are things going since you were down there Saturday? What's your assessment of the protests and the police response to them?
Look, I think that generally speaking, most of the folks who come down there come down with the intention of peacefully protesting. And a number of variables often can turn a peaceful protest into what becomes then an unrestful protest. And so I think that's what you're seeing. I think things are settling down. But here's the underlying factor. Until we really get at this issue that has plagued our country since its very beginning, since its very, very birth, we are going to have these kinds of moments in our history that really push us to rethink the things that make us the great democracy that we are, and push us to change our policies, change our actions, and change the way we think and live. You know, we've been living in a pandemic in 2020, a global pandemic. But the reality is that there was a pandemic before the pandemic.
Kevin Boyce joins us. He's the Franklin County Commissioner. We're talking about, of course, the events of the past 2 months, really, with the pandemic and how it's disproportionately affected African Americans, and of course, in the past week, the protests and the other issue that is long, 400 years affected us here in the United States. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number is 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. One more question, Commissioner Boyce, on the issue of police response and what prompted these demonstrations. The City Council, President Shannon Harden, others have endorsed a civilian review board for police in the city of Columbus. Would you support that for Franklin County deputies as well?
You know, yeah, I would. I've always been a believer and an advocate of an independent authority on, we all have those, you know, elected officials have those. Everyone has a sort of checks and balances that to their ethics that keep sort of the system straight and regular. And I think it's important to recognize that the vast majority of law enforcement officers are good people. They do their jobs very well, and they protect us in some of the most unsavory scenarios. But it is that 1% or so that we have to be mindful for a fair process to take place, that justice should be served everywhere, and everybody is subject to that kind of review, and so should our law enforcement officers. So, yes, I would support that.
Should that commission have subpoena power?
Yes, I believe they should. You know, so let me give you a little history for me. When I was on City Council of Columbus almost 20 years ago, that sounds like so long, but almost 20 years ago, these are things I advocated for. We've been talking about the Civilian Review Board for a long time. And, you know, imagine if we had done it 20 years ago here and where how advanced we'd be as Central Ohio. And so it's great that we're, you know, moving in that direction now. But we could have accomplished this 20 years ago. We've got to take a moment to make change. You know, that Woodrow Wilson once said that if you want to make enemies, then try to change something. And it's just the way it goes. There are some people that push back. But the reality is fair is fair and right is right. Racism needs to end now.
To that end, you and other commissioners have declared racism a public health crisis. And the Franklin County Board of Health, the Franklin County Health Department, started working on this well before the pandemic. What was the impetus?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question, because everyone sort of zeroes in on the declaration of our resolution. But the fact is that we've been working on this for over 2 years when we launched a deep dive on why are families staying in poverty? What is the cycle of poverty and generational poverty? And, you know, as you know, the county runs the welfare system, and we were seeing those numbers grow. And we said, you know, our job is to reduce those numbers, to help those families be sustainable. And so we started a year-long deep dive, and embedded in what we learned was that every element of disparate numbers is the racism. And so we began to take it on. We created this plan called the Rise Together to Reduce Poverty Blueprint that is really our sort of instruction manual on the things that Franklin County is going to invest in, going to take action on, going to commit to, that will allow us to move the dial in the direction of reducing poverty. But embedded in that is racism.
We're speaking with Kevin Voice, Franklin County Commissioner, about racism as a public health crisis. The work on this designation began many, many weeks ago, months ago, years ago, according to the Commissioner Boyce, but of course is front and center right now, given the coronavirus pandemic and the protest of the past week. Commissioner Boyce, when you declare a crisis, public officials generally get more power to solve it. Like more money for services, more money to repair things. Do officials have more authority now to fight racism with this designation?
Well, let me just start with a few facts that I want to make sure everyone knows. You know, African Americans have disparate numbers in nearly every category of health, like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, and other chronic diseases. But you can also see those numbers reflected in the criminal justice system and educational numbers, healthcare access, employment numbers, and certainly wealth. And so, you know, the idea is for us to really be able to invest in the broader underlying issue of racism and begin to take that on. So what we've done, Franklin County, you brought up resources to it, we've created what we refer to as an innovation hub. And the innovation hub is designed to vet, test, and pilot programs and models that are big ideas to reduce poverty, big ideas to change racism. And we've dedicated $2.5 million annually to this project. And that's just the county budget. We're working with the private sector to match us. We're working with the state government to invest in it. We're asking them all to invest in it. And so we hope that when it's all said and done, there will be tens of million dollars in sort of this big ideas that in innovation on reducing poverty, ending racism, that we can vet, test, and pilot in a way that allows us to replicate it in an impactful and meaningful way.
You've been in government a long time. You've seen task forces and commissions and resolutions come and go on this issue. If I'm a member of the African-American community in Columbus facing these challenges, how is this designation going to be any different than what we have seen for the past decades?
Because the county really, in the last few decades, the county really has not taken this by the bullhorn like we have now. In the last 2 years, myself and my colleagues, John O'Grady and Marilyn Brown, have, you know, issued the edict to the county to say, this is our value, this is our priority, and we're going to, everything we do, will have an element of these principles involved in it, whether it's contracting and construction, or how we hire in our hiring practices, or the services that we deliver. We are committed to it at a level where folks can see what we're doing, and we have the credibility to urge for the following. You know, someone asked me this earlier today about the others that are starting to do. The city of Columbus did it last night. You know, other entities have done it all around the state, and I've gotten no less than 50 calls from around the country. And the idea around it is that what we're doing is supposed to start a movement. It's supposed to get the business community to take action. It's supposed to get other cities and municipalities to take action, other counties to take action. Because when we start doing that and make it sort of the heartbeat or the value of Ohio, then you really got change afoot. And so I think, you know, we are, you know, this isn't like the conversations in the past. This isn't the reports and, you know, and white papers of the past. Everything we do has action items rooted in it, you know, or else, you know, why waste the time? So I think, you know, patience is a virtue. At the same time, we're seeing action items that we're going to hold ourselves accountable in the same way the community holds us accountable.
So how will you measure success? The county and the city both have procedures, protocols, rules for hiring minority contractors, for example, for making sure, trying to make sure that the workforce is diverse, to monitor courts and social welfare programs. How will you know if this designation is different than what you've already done, and how will you know if it is a success?
Because we believe that the data will tell the story just like it does today. When you look at the health disparity numbers and all the social determinants of health, all of the statistics, all of the data tell us that there are racial elements involved, and they tell us that a certain group of people are missing out on a high quality of life, but for these elements. And so, you know, you can simply track the data. You can simply look at the data. But here's the thing. You know, data doesn't always tell the story about growth. It doesn't tell the story about the possibilities that exist in the work that we're doing. And so we're going to employ a level of patience with the things that we invest and test in, and we'll have a more longitudinal view of where things are going. You know, we'll work directly with families and folks in the community to really have them drive the ideas, drive and help us drive, you know, or learn whether or not something is working. We created this with the Innovation Hub. We created an independent nonprofit board that is made up of community agency leaders, you know, community representatives, corporate leaders, to really allow that organization to be critical of the work that we're doing so that we can make audible adjustments along the way. You know, it's like the quarterback that steps up to the line and sees the defense is in a certain defense that might stop the play. They call an audible and hot route the receivers to change the play so that they can make a move. That's how we're going to approach this. The feedback that we get from the community, the feedback that we get from our board will allow us to adjust and be nimble enough to absorb criticism, to take good ideas and test them, and most importantly, when we don't see something working, move on to the next idea so that we don't spend resources and time on a failed effort.
One more question, Kevin Boyce, Franklin County Commissioner. You talk about the data, implementing policies, innovating procedures and practices, but it comes down to culture and how the rank and file folks implement this, whether it's a guard at the Franklin County Jail, a deputy, or a social worker trying to help folks in the community. How does this designation, how do you hope this designation helps change the culture to make everyone aware of the disparities and to be continuously conscious about them?
Look, I've been in politics for over 20 years, and here's what I know for sure. You cannot legislate morality. At the end of the day, it's all of our responsibility to embrace culture, to embrace diversity, to embrace inclusion. And so we've got a long way to go to peel back the layers that created the very heart of this country and what we do. But nonetheless, we're going to, you know, call on people to join us, call on everyday folks and organizations to be a part of this work and to commit to it publicly, commit to it privately, and to be vested in it just like we are. And we can't do that if we're not doing our part. And so I think it starts with us and it ends with the everyday people embracing the same kinds of values and principles. And I think you'll see that when you see these demonstrations and protests, take note that, you know, there are as many white people out there as black people. It's a diverse group, people from all walks of life and people who understand this at every level. After the incident that happened to on Saturday, I got calls from everybody. I got emails and Instagram messages and Twitter messages from people from all walks of life. And I think the conversation is where it needs to be. And it's unfortunate we're going through this growing pain, but I think we'll be better tomorrow than we are today.
Kevin Boyce, Franklin County Commissioner, joining us here on All Sides. Thanks for joining us, Mr. Boyce. Be well.
Great. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for your interest in the topic.
All right. When we come back, we'll take a look at some of the science, the health science behind declaring what is a human behavior as a public health crisis. That's when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. We are talking about racism and race as a public health crisis, as a public health emergency, a novel approach to a centuries-old problem. But of course, we all know the facts that African-Americans and people of color are disproportionately affected by coronavirus. We've seen that over the past couple of months, but they also have higher rates of stroke, of heart disease, diabetes, obesity, infant mortality among African-Americans is much higher than it is among whites. And of course, life expectancy, as you'd expect, is much lower for African-Americans, for blacks, than it is for whites in this country. We're talking about racism as a public health crisis. And during this segment, we'll look at some of the science and the health behind it. Joining us now is Shaunita Seely Jefferson. She's an epidemiology professor at the College of Public Health at Ohio State University. She is the principal investigator and leader of a lab that seeks to find solutions to the disproportionate burden of infant mortality among African-American women. Shaunita Seely Jefferson, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk first about just the term crisis. When you think of a crisis, you think of a catastrophic event, an earthquake, the sudden collapse of the banking industry, a global pandemic. Racism has been with us in this country for 400 years. Why is it now a crisis, do you think?
I think that it has always been a crisis for those of us who whose lives are shortened by it, those of us who don't have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in this country. It's always been a crisis. It is a good thing now that racism, it has been declared as a public health crisis today. But for those of us who have been disproportionately impacted by it, it's always been a crisis.
What does a crisis designation mean to you when a government body like the Franklin County Commissioners, the board in charge of Ohio's largest county, the city council of the state's largest city, Columbus, declares it a crisis? What does that designation mean to you?
That designation to me suggests that maybe we're going to start having a real conversation about how we got here. And when I say here, I mean Black people have higher rates of everything. We die more from everything. And we don't generally have a conversation about how we got to this point. And the underlying reason for racial disparities in health is racism, especially when you consider that for as long as we've had data, for over 100 years of data, these disparities have been with us. We've seen disparities across the board, from chronic diseases, from infectious diseases, to infant mortality and maternal mortality. We've seen these disparities for 100 years. That suggests to me that everything that has been done hasn't worked because we haven't addressed the root cause of these disparities, which is racism. So to me, this designation means that we're going to have a different conversation, one that isn't focused on people's behaviors or people's genetics or people's poor choices. The conversation is going to be elevated to a conversation that maybe will move us toward equity for everybody.
We're speaking with Shaunita Seely Jefferson. She's an epidemiologist at the Ohio State University College of Public Health. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Shaunita, let's look at some of these disparities. Which of the disparities that we listed here is the most glaring, and do you think is the most, can you pick one that is the most illustrative of the racism differences, the race differences in health?
Well, I study preterm birth, which is the leading cause of infant death. And I would argue that one is, we gauge the overall health of a population by our infant mortality rate. So, and these disparities in infant mortality have persisted for over 100 years. So to me, the outcome of your birth dictates your later chronic, your future chronic disease risk. So then if you're born too soon, you have higher risk of having chronic diseases, cardiovascular diseases, all kinds of poor health as a result of the outcome of your birth, which is a very telling feature of our society. Like, it is that infant mortality, those disparities tell us a lot about how we care for the most vulnerable, which are newborns. So I would say our infant mortality rates are the disparities that are one of the most atrocious to me.
It's where it all begins, where health issues begin, where a path to success or trouble begins, is certainly, as you said, begins at birth, if not before birth. So explain to us how what are the reasons, the underlying causes, why the infant mortality rate is higher among African Americans?
So a lot of people have written about, and people talk about fundamental causes or the root causes of racial disparities in health. And racism is a fundamental cause of inequalities in health and mortality, because racism operates in innumerable ways, and it structures our society in a way that unfairly privileges some people and unfairly disadvantages other people. And that privileging is unfair, and the disadvantaging is also unfair. So when people talk about racism, I think the first thing people think about is like a white person calling a black person the N-word. That's an incomplete and naive understanding of racism. Racism impacts black people in every way, every day, across for their whole life. And I think we don't see all of the ways in which racism might be doing the things that it's doing, because some of us don't have to see it. Some of us don't have to put our kids in schools that are disinvested, that there's no school supplies in the school. There's no working water fountains. The teachers are not invested in the success of the kids. Some of us don't have to do those things. Some of us don't have to, when our kids go outside to play, we worry about whether they're going to come back home. Like, that is a stressor that is caused by being minoritized in the society, that people who don't experience those similar stressors might not realize.
So those stresses lead to mental health issues, could lead to physical ailments, stress issues that affects, you know, the heart, the could affect stroke, could affect obesity and addictive behavior. Is that what you're saying? That's how it relates back to health?
It impacts everything. Stress is the underlying pathway. So what we have is, we have stressors from everywhere, all across our life course, from before we're born until the day we die. That has an impact, a negative impact on our health, on every organ system, on every potential mental health outcome. These stressors impact everything: behavioral factors, biologic factors, mental health issues, everything. So it's an umbrella under which there's a lot of different things, mm-hmm. and it's not one thing. And what we know from the data is that since we've seen these disparities for over 100 years, and probably and before that, right? Like, we just don't have the data. The data weren't collected on everybody equitably. We see that every public health initiative, every intervention, none of those things worked when we look at the data at the population level, which means something hasn't been quantified. And I would argue, and I'm not alone in arguing this, that racism is the main thing that we haven't addressed. And that's why we see the disparities persisting for as long as we've seen them.
Shaunita Seely Jefferson is an epidemiological professor at the College of Public Health at Ohio State University. She joins us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson, sitting in for Ann Fisher today. We're talking about racism as a public health crisis. Franklin County Commissioners and Columbus City Council have both designated it so. There's a call on the state legislature to declare it for the entire state of Ohio. Getting to, you know, racism is a very complex thing, but it's in its essence a culture and a human behavior. It's not something that occurs in nature, like, say, you know, plaque on things like that, on arteries and things like that. So other behaviors are detrimental to our health: smoking, drinking to excess, overeating, not wearing seatbelts. Can you put racism in among those behaviors as a unhealthy behavior?
I would not put it in with that. So when we see behaviors that we know aren't health promoting, the question that we should be asking is why. So if people drink to excess, why? We have to keep tracing back the whys till we get to the main thing. So if people are drinking to excess, why are they doing that? Mm-hmm. Are people so overwhelmed in their life because there's state sanctioned violence? State-sanctioned homicides in broad daylight, on tape, on camera, and people aren't held accountable? Like, that's a stressor. Like, what should people do? Should people just not feel anything about that? Like, these are the questions that we aren't asking. We're focusing on people's behaviors rather than the conditions that society places them in that causes those behaviors.
So, but we still have to do something. As a culture, we have to mm-hmm. behave differently as a culture, as a system. Mm-hmm. It still comes down to things that humans do, whether they're white, whether they're black, or any color. How can we solve it? How can we use this crisis designation to improve it? I don't think I'm not going to solve it overnight, certainly, but how can mm-hmm. we improve it? How can we make it better than the previous things you've mentioned that we've done in the past?
I think the first thing that we have to do is we have to tell the truth about the history of Black people in this country and how this country was founded, which is the baseline conversation that we have to have in order to move forward. Racism built this country even before we had a country. This our nation was founded on racism. And if we can't even say that, we can't move forward. The next thing we have to be clear about is that people of color, Black people, are not responsible to come up with solutions for addressing racism. That has to be the majority population. White people have to say, these inequities in health and mortality have persisted for so long, we're sick of it, we're going to do something about it. And then find all of the ways in which racism shows up in our society and privileges some people and disadvantages other people. There's innumerable ways that racism shows up and affects people, and it's killing people. And so the people who benefit from racism have to be the ones who say, we're going to do something about this. I'm going to speak up in my community when I see people being treated differently than how I'm treated. So this empathy is going to have to kick in, because I don't think it has kicked in to the level that it needs to among people who are not impacted by racism. So the burden of responsibility to do something about racism, to find ways to address it, is going to be have to be coming from the people who benefit from it. There's not enough Black people in this country to undo racism. We didn't create it. We don't benefit from it. In fact, we are oppressed by it. Mm-hmm. So the heavy lifting can't be from us.
Do you now? We've had these discussions. They've been, I mean, the whole civil rights movement, but that was all in the context of equal rights at the ballot box, equal rights to equal pay, being able, I mean, equal rights to in the justice system, mass incarceration. This is different. This is highlighting health. Will this be a better path to make folks who are not in the minority communities, white folks, care more about this issue? Is this something that will, because not, let's face it, many of us never experienced the justice system. Many of us never experienced discrimination. Me as a white guy don't experience discrimination at all in what I do in a daily life. But I have health issues, and I know people who have health issues. Is health a better path to get folks like me, a white male, to care about racism and do something about it?
I don't know. I don't know, because one of the things, though, that we need to be clear about is that all of these things are related. So the criminal justice system, voting, like all of these rights. So one of the things that we don't do in this country is like focus on human rights. Other countries do, but we don't. Human rights isn't our frame. We are individualistic, and we don't necessarily see how all of the human rights are inextricably linked and can't be separated. So, like, I think we might start with human rights as a baseline. So, you as a white man have a certain quality of life that isn't impacted by racism. Mm-hmm. But can you imagine how it feels to be a Black man who's targeted and the victim of violence, police violence? Can you imagine that?
I think we have the events of the past week give folks a better idea. I mean, the cumulative effect. We keep seeing these things on videotape over and over again, and I hopefully have a better idea of what African American men in particular face. I think we saw that last week.
It's atrocious that there's so much ambivalence. It's atrocious. It says something about our humanity. The people who aren't impacted by these oppressions don't have to think about it, don't have to know about it, don't have to be outraged about it. That says something about humanity. That says something about the state of people's soul, which is something we need to talk about. Mm-hmm. We need to have a conversation about that.
One more question, and then we'll let you go. Thank you very much for joining us here. Shanita Seeley Jefferson from Ohio State University. She studies infant mortality and why it is such a higher rate than it is among African Americans than it is among white Americans. Let me ask you a question. Everything's a crisis these days, and frankly, it's us and the media that are probably to blame for most of that hyperbole. Do you worry that people will just shrug their shoulders at yet another crisis?
There's that possibility. I don't think a whole lot about that. I feel like I'm energized. I'm inspired by my students, by colleagues who are out here telling the truth, who are being uncomfortable and not trying to get out of the discomfort, who are saying this is unacceptable, we're not going to take it. I see a lot of people doing that as opposed to people saying like, oh, okay, it's not that big of a deal. Like I'm choosing to focus my attention on the people who don't experience racism but who are saying racism is unacceptable and we're not going to take it. People are dying and we see it with our own eyes. We see it. We feel it. It's wrong, and we're going to do something about it. I'm choosing to focus on people who are going to be part of the solution, and not those who don't feel anything about the current events and the past events. And I just hope that we have enough momentum to keep this going.
Thank you very much, Shanita Seeley Jefferson, epidemiology professor at Ohio State's College of Public Health. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides with Ann Fisher. When we come back, we'll look at what is going on at the State House. There's a movement to declare race as a public health emergency for all of Ohio. We'll talk about that when All Sides continues here on 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Mike Thompson sitting in for Ann today. We are talking racism as a public health crisis. Franklin County and the city of Columbus have declared it so. Now there is a move for the state of Ohio to follow. The Democratic leader in the Ohio House says they plan to ask lawmakers to declare racism as a public health emergency. We're looking at why this designation and what it will mean. And joining us now is Representative Stephanie House, a Democrat from Cleveland, who is president of the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus. Representative, welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Hi, you there? Stephanie, are you there?
I'm sorry, I was on mute. Good morning.
What do you think, this is a Zoom meeting?
Yes.
Wait a minute, I'm on mute. That's one of the phrases we're going to remember from this pandemic.
Absolutely.
Anyway, one of the other things, back on a much more serious note, one of the other things that has become very evident from this pandemic is, again, showing that African-Americans, Black Americans are disproportionately affected by health issues. And so lawmakers at the State House are looking to declare racism as a public health emergency because of those disparities. My question to you is, emergency means something has happened. What has changed?
Well, what has changed is that we are seeing the culmination of the civil unrest that is happening within our communities, not only throughout Ohio, but across this country, because of this government's refusal to put in action policies and practices that will call out racism and actually dismantle the systems of racism that have oppressed and led to the untimely deaths of way too many Black men and women throughout this country and other people of color. And so as we have looked at, like, the movements you talked about, the city of Columbus and Franklin County, there's movement within the city of Cleveland to declare racism as a public health crisis. We thought that the time is now for the state of Ohio to become a leader in this nation to declare racism as a public health crisis, as well as following the policy and practices of our state government and in the General Assembly to change the trajectory and truly create a more perfect union here in Ohio.
So you're looking to change the trajectory, because you mentioned dismantling 400 years of history. That's in culture that's deeply ingrained in this country. That's really difficult. But you just want to bend the curve a little bit, change the trajectory?
No. It's not even about bending the curve. The first and foremost thing, before you can fix a problem, you have to acknowledge a problem. And this government, our state, has never acknowledged racism, you know, as a problem, let alone a public health crisis. When you understand the interconnectedness, you know, mentally and physically that happens to African Americans and other people of color on the basis of just what they look like. And we need to dismantle it. And it needs to be a comprehensive approach. And the resolution that we have laid out is a starting point. These things that we have laid out within our resolution, they are not new. Literally, legislators for decades have been introducing these things, you know, in different bits and pieces. And it's like, you know, when will leaders in this state and across this country recognize what we have been doing is not working in a comprehensive manner?
One of the things that you point to, and leaders in the House, Democratic leaders in the House, point to Governor Kasich, Republican Governor John Kasich's task force on community police relations. It was formed after Cleveland police immediately upon arrival shot and killed 12-year-old Tamir Rice, who was holding an air pistol. The elements that you're pointing to that this task force recommended: ban racial profiling, require data collection on who is stopped by police, and mandate independent investigations whenever a law enforcement officer shoots someone. Those are some of the things that you're hoping is a part of this emergency designation, correct?
Absolutely. And beyond that, that's one of the things when people talk about this, you know, this is just a spark. But when we look at the Black experience in Ohio and across this country, there is so much more. We are talking about the business owners that are not given equitable treatment when it comes to funding. We are talking about our educational systems that do not treat Black and brown children fairly. We are looking at our healthcare system where, again, because of the various biases and policies put in place, you know, African Americans and Hispanics and Asian Americans are not believed and are not getting the quality health care they truly deserve. So this goes broad and deep, and it's not just criminal justice system, but we are at a moment in history where people are fed up. They're fed up, and they're not taking it. And you can see it through demonstrations and civil unrest throughout this country. And I think it would be advisable for us as leaders to take serious heed, not just in words, but in deed, to address racism and dismantle the system of racism that our bodies, our institutions, the Ohio General Assembly, have actually developed and promoted for generations.
So help us understand what it means. Will policies change? Will state policies change if we declare an emergency?
When you declare an emergency, first of all, you know, it does a varying things. It's like 16 different things, making the declaration racism as a public health crisis. The governor needs to establish a working group to promote racial equity. And then from there, there is work within the Ohio General Assembly from like developing a glossary of terms to actually giving local government agencies the tools to actively and authentically engage with communities of color. It also requires us to actually look through the Ohio Revised Code at our policies, but look through it through our racial equity lens. It is also about developing policies that promote the health of the people of color, providing training within the workplace, promote racially equitable hiring practices. You know, you name it, it runs the gamut. But again, to dismantle a system, you have to do it in a comprehensive manner. And that is what this resolution lays out, a framework for not only the state, the governor to do, but also members of the General Assembly to truly begin to undertake dismantling the system of racism that we find ourselves in.
You know, normally when you declare a crisis or an emergency, it often comes with more money, whether it's to repair damage from a hurricane, to bail out banks, provide unemployment to workers. Does this designation come with more money?
And that is a part of the resolution to secure the resources. And when we talk about resources, it's time, money, and people to accomplish the things that we have outlined in this resolution.
Do you know how much money?
No, we do not know that because, again, this is an undertaking that we have never embarked on before in Ohio's history. And so as there is a lot of work, it is not just this General Assembly work. This is an undertaking for General Assemblies to come. And but the resources, there has to be a sincere commitment of resources and time, money, and people to ensure that the system of racism that the state of Ohio has created can be dismantled.
This is a really big undertaking that you're taking here. Are you thinking too big? Would it be easier to chip away at one thing at a time and, you know, get a win here and get another win here? I don't know how you do that, but I'm just thinking, there's a lot here, and if it might be too big for folks, frankly, white folks, to get their arms around.
Again, well, that is a problem. It can never be thinking too big when it comes to the death and the devastation of Black people, not only in Ohio but across this country. And this country and the state of Ohio has never come to a reckoning for the intentional practices and policies that have been done to the destruction and the death of Black people. And we will never have peace if the state of Ohio would not have a reckoning for that and begin to put in place the things. We did not get here overnight, and we will not get out of this overnight. But it will take leaders, courageous leaders, regardless of political affiliation, regardless of racial cultures, to do what's right by people. Many times throughout history, you had people who wanted to put forth varying things from various political parties, right? But again, it was never a masses of people who believed that Black people were worthy. We are now seeking unapologetically to our members, specifically white men in this country who are leading this state, to be partners and to be leaders. They want to claim that they are God-fearing and they love the Lord. This is far from godly. The denying of racism and to work into dismantling racism. People want to tell you, you talk about it being too big. People think that we should be satisfied as the people that are in these streets in Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, Akron, Canton, Dayton, and the likes, and all across this country should be satisfied with the little mere crumbs that are handed out. And we should not be upset because our babies are being killed. We are being miseducated. Families are losing their homes. We are dying because of health disparities. We will never. You know what I'm saying? It is not too big. We are brilliant and smart, and we can make it happen.
You are asking basically for government to take a leading role, if not solve this problem. Can government change the culture of centuries of racism? Can government do that, or does society have to do it?
It is a partner. First of all, government can do it in partnership with its citizens. Government is the one who created it. It is in our documents, founding documents, not only in the U.S. Constitution, but also in legislatures all across the state who had a direct role and a responsibility of actually creating this horrendous system of racism that has oppressed Black people. That is a fact. So if you created the problem, you absolutely have an obligation and a responsibility to address it.
Let's talk politics here a little bit. Chances of passage. Republicans at the State House these days question the effectiveness of face coverings to stop the spread of coronavirus. How are you going to convince them to declare what is a human behavior and a cultural, cultural behavior as a public health crisis?
At the end of the day, the policies that we are living under, people create policies. And it is only through people that we will continue to beat this message. We are going through the undertaking of having real substantive conversations with the governor of the state, also hoping that we can have these substantive conversations with the Speaker of the House as well as the President of the Senate. If the will is there within those three men who are in places, then those behind them will follow. And so that is what we are doing. The people of Ohio, there is a contingency of people of Ohio, and we believe that the majority of Ohioans want this. And if leaders are here to serve people, they will be open, they will work in partnership, and they will take the undertaking because they have a responsibility to do so.
It's a bold plan, affects a lot of state government, if not all of state government. Legislation is always compromise. Are you willing to compromise on things to get something passed? And if you are willing to compromise, what are some places where you might be able to do that?
Again, things that have been rolled out and have been laid out, compromises, the only compromise I think that should be looked at is the compromise getting to the goal, which is dismantling the system of racism. That is the goal. And as the compromises lead to that, then we can talk about it. What those compromises are, I have no idea. I am eagerly awaiting what they could be, what they may be. But we have put forth a plan and really are open. If there are others who have plans and thoughts and suggestions of how we can dismantle the system of racism, we would happily welcome them as long as it gets to the goal.
Representative Stephanie House, Democrat from Cleveland, president of the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus, joining us here on All Sides, urging her fellow state lawmakers to declare racism as a public health emergency. Representative House, thanks for joining us here on All Sides.
Thank you so much for having me. You all have a blessed day.
Same to you. Thanks for joining us here on All Sides. I'm Mike Thompson filling in for Ann today. Big topic, obviously a topic on everyone's minds right now, racism. What do we do to end it here in Columbus and around the country? A special shout out today, Max Garrison, our student intern. He's in charge of getting folks on the air, getting your calls on the air. He's here today even though he got pepper sprayed by police last night covering the disturbances on campus. So a shout out to Max for his excellent work and the excellent work of the Lantern reporters, his colleagues who have been doing a terrific job. And also a shout out to WOSU reporters for their work covering this situation. This has been All Sides with Ann Fisher here on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Mike Thompson. Have a good day.